In this episode, we find out what it's been like to sell Porsches for 24 years with Harbour Cars.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another, what we hope will be, what we're sure will be, a stellar episode of Nineworks Radio. To my right is Mr. Andy Brooks.
Good day.
How you doing, mate? You good?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, I'm very good, thanks. I'm very good. I'm very excited. So we are sitting just inside the showroom at Harbour Cars, and we're joined by two very special guests who we're delighted to have on Nineworks Radio today. So first of all, Rob Langley, the MD at Harbour Cars. Hello.
Hello there. Hello, Lee. Good afternoon.
Thanks very much for joining us. And Chris Thwaites, and I've got, it's quite a mouthful, your title. So Senior Porsche Sales Specialist.
That's a long title. But hi, love it.
Excellent. So yeah, thanks for having us back, I guess. It's been nice to visit the showroom. I think end of last year was the first time I've been here.
Yeah, just after Christmas. No, just before Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I apologise when I walked through the door, because I said I've been in the industry for 12, 13 years now, and then for whatever reason, I just hadn't stepped through the door here, and it's something I really regret, because, I mean, I've admired from afar previously, I think it's fair to say, but it's nice to walk through the door and see what you guys are all about.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Welcome. Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah, no, likewise. It was nice to finally get you in here, obviously, having chatted for a while before you came in. It was nice for you to see what we do.
Yeah.
Very colourful showroom today.
We tried, thanks.
So we've got all the colours out there.
Well, we have, and also, obviously you can't show this on a podcast, right? But we had, we liked the presentation of the cars and how they're basically all in a line to within an inch of each other all the way along. Like, it is pretty perfect presentation for these cars, and you know, details matter, right? So.
Yeah, we're very pleased that you noticed that. It's a big part of our day. Yeah.
Precision engineering for lining up the cars.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah, look, you know, you guys are a proud partner of ours on Nineworks now, and the cars have been on the marketplace for a few weeks, which is lovely to have you on there, because what you do as a business definitely represents like our values for prep and integrity and customer service and everything else. So, with that in mind, it'd be nice to dive into the story of Harbour Cars a little bit more. So you're coming up to 25 years next year, right, of business, which is an incredible achievement. Yeah. So, yeah, Rob, would you maybe mind just discussing or divulging how the business started?
How did the business start? Well, how far do you want to go back? I bought my first car at 16 and sold it at 17, and I'm still about 35 years on, as yet to exceed the profit margin that I made on that car.
Oh, wow.
I still haven't really got close yet. So why did it start? So I love cars, and I worked in the motor trade, and I worked for Peugeot, and I worked for Mercedes-Benz. And then when I was at Mercedes-Benz, we were on a campus, if you like. We're next to a sports car business, and the sports car business that we owned and we shared, the workshops were next door to each other, was Aston Martin, TVR, Lotus, and Morgan. And so whilst these were all lovely cars and they were very interesting, what I saw was that the part exchanges that were coming in were where my interest lay, and also where there seemed to be better business. So, and the part exchanges at the time, which weren't that product, were things like Porsche and Ferrari, and they made a good business out of retailing them as secondhand cars. And so I came to leave Mercedes-Benz and set up my own business. And the very first car that I was asked to source was a 993 C4S. Wow. So I did, and got a really lovely 993 C4S, and it really developed from there. But we didn't have the budget to be able to stock a showroom with just Porsche at the time. So Porsche was, oh, it's probably about a quarter to a third of our product. And then we sold other German cars like Mercedes and Audi and BMW, more interesting cars from those ranges. And then it progressed over time. So we're in our 24th year now. We've now probably been purely Porsche for 5 or 6 years, but it's probably been 2/3 of our business for much longer than that. So,
What led the progression, I guess, if you like, to like 100% Porsche? Is it like product focused, or, you know, how? Yeah, I think how did you get there?
It just seemed to feel an obvious thing to do, you know. So we started by selling Porsche because I love the product, obviously. Yeah. And when it's your own business, the one advantage you get is you can do almost whatever you want within the law. So you can, if you like something, you can just deal in it. And I've received all sorts of comments about some of the cars that we had over time and how we seem to be going Porsche-centric when we were selling, the 3 or 4 German products that we were. And then it was, well, I like this product, so why can't we do it? And to a certain extent, I was a little bit resistant to give up those Mercedes-Benz ties that I had. Mm. But the time came, and it's not to say we won't sell one or two Mercedes-Benzes this year, but that product isn't the same as it was. It isn't the product. It's not really the same product across the board as when I worked for the manufacturer. I love Porsche, and I love dealing in that product, and it's what I want to do. So I do it.
Yeah, right. Fantastic. Yeah. That's a hell of a first assignment. So when you're saying sourcing the C4S, 2000 the business started, so that C4S is like nearly new, stock, you know.
Yeah, so it was a 1997 P-Reg, done 19,000 miles in what it would just been metallic black then, and it was I sold it for 47,000 pounds. 47,000 pounds with 19,000 miles on it.
My God.
What would that be today? That's probably
110, 120, something like that.
I think, well, it depends. If it still had the 19,000 miles on it, I think it probably would be around 100-ish, wouldn't it? It might be 10 or 15 back from that if it had done a few miles in the meantime. Unfortunately, that car is no more.
Okay. We won't ask the obvious next question.
The man I sold the man I sold it to, he sold it back, and then we sold it back out, and then the rest is
quite literally history. Yes. Okay, then. So, Chris, so, where do you fit into this? Because I know this is your second stint here, and I know that the guys and no doubt the customer base are chuffed to have you back.
So. Yeah, no, I was in a completely different role prior to coming here, but I had obviously worked in the car trade before. So I joined here 2012, at the end of 2012. At that point, I was actually working for Sussex Police, assisting to run in the custody suites and things like that. So a very different role. But I had come out of the motor trade before that. So I had a break. So I'd worked, I went into the motor trade a bit like Rob, starting sort of on the more generic day-to-day cars. I came in on Vauxhall, then moved on to Seat, then had a brief stint with BMW, which weirdly killed my enthusiasm for main dealer working. So it was just one of those things that you go in there as a fan of BMWs at the time, and owning them and having them at the time, I thought, well, I can't work for BMW.
Yeah.
I spent X amount of years working with Vauxhall and Seat, now I've got this chance to go and do it. I went in there and did it. Within about a month, I'd realised this is not for me. Just the ethic was very different to what I wanted it to be. And I enjoyed the cars and the people and chatting to people about the cars. And it was a different method. It was more about insurance products and stuff, and that's not what I wanted. I was more about chatting to people about cars, helping people find the right cars and things. So I just took a break from the motor trade. I always had an interest in joining the police, and I thought, well, we'll go and do this and see whether it's worth me pursuing that avenue. And then out of nowhere, It was my wife actually pointing out that this advert for a Porsche dealership in Chichester.
Well, I didn't know that.
There you go. So she pointed this thing out. She goes, "Oh, look, you love Porsche. Why don't you go and have a go at that one?" All right, nothing gained here. If I don't give it a whirl, you never know. So, the rest is history. So I joined that. I obviously applied, came through, joined in at back end of 2012 and stayed here till 2019. And then, went off to do something different, as we know, with Heritage, try and transpire and build their Porsche development side of things. We'd stayed in touch, sort of through things, as you do, because one of the people that we were talking to were other Porsche dealers. And obviously, we'd worked together for a long time, so we just popped in every now and then, cup of tea. And one day, Sam was leaving. And so Rob just gave me a call and said, "Do you want to have a chat?" And I was like, "Yeah, why not?
Fancy again."
I miss the cars. I miss, dealing with people and doing this. And, whilst it was nice working Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, this is more where my passion lies. So came back here last year. And, that's where the story ends, really.
Yeah.
So here then. So,
Yeah, or where it begins for a second time round, I guess.
Continues.
I guess you've touched on it there, but like it, you obviously like it here at Harpercast because it's your second stint. So what do you like about here and working in like the independent specialist sector over like main dealer that where you've been before?
So that's an interesting question. This is exactly what you imagine the motor trade to be like coming in from the outside. It's cars, it's excitement, it's enjoyment, it's, there's obviously a lot of paperwork and admin and, that you've got to do, but that's, that's interesting as well. But, for people like us that are passionate about cars and passionate about the product, it's what you want to do. You want to come in and you want to be able to jump in a 911 and go, "Oh, I'm just going to go and get some fuel in this, or I'm going to take this somewhere and have a, learn about the cars and just live out childhood dreams.
Actually know what the cars are.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you've got to do that. You've got to have the ability to, obviously jump in it and use it, be able to talk to people about it practically and, what they like to live with. And, we were chatting this afternoon about a guy that's a very similar height to me and, the difference in height, which is what you were doing when you turned up. We were just comparing roof heights of different cars. And obviously we've got the luxury of me being quite tall, but, we can have that ability to check headroom and things. So this is more about the cars and about getting people the car that they want and the product that they want. And if we haven't got it, let them know when we have. Or, we'll know someone that's got that car. Maybe drop them a message and say, "Let you fancy a change," And help people facilitate dreams.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit cheesy and a bit corny, but it is a dream car. It's an aspirational car, isn't it? It's like you don't sort of, I don't know what the nice way of saying it is, but you want to own one of these because, that's why you do it. That's why we all do it. That's why we're into Porsche and we spend weekends at track days and talking to other people at pubs and things. It's a passion, isn't it? So
yeah,
it's helping people change their dream car or achieve their dream car or just do something different or just scratch an itch and try something different. And that's what it's about, getting people in there. And that's so different to how it was at a main dealer. It was more, "We've got 5 of these, you've got to sell 5 of these this week, and you've got 10 of these to get out by the end of the month, and this person wants a yellow one, but give them a grey one," and it kind of trying to persuade people into something they didn't really want. It's like, that's not what I'm about. I'd rather somebody turn around to me and says, "Love that, but really want to have Bose." Fine. Okay. I'll let you know we've got one with Bose. Might not be the next 6 months, but I'll give you a nudge. And then 6 months later, you can get in touch with them and they're like, "Great, still waiting. Thanks very much." The conversation continues.
It goes back to what we said on the podcast before, nobody needs a Porsche. We own them because we want to, right?
Yes.
And then that just comes primarily from passion. And it really does help, and it furthers the customer experience if that passion is matched by the other side.
Very much.
It's not always guaranteed, right? So, and that's, again, that's kind of a marker of what we look for with, like, who we'd like to work with and advocate, I guess. And it's definitely like the feeling you get when you come through here. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that, you could pop in here for a cup of tea, have a chat about cars. You might not be buying a car today, but if you're buying one next month or in 6 months' time when things change or a car comes in that you might appreciate, it's the platform to
explore. Exactly. We have people that drop us an email. So, "Look, I'm confused with the range. I'm looking at, this or this. I don't know what the differences are." And we had that last weekend with a chap, and he was looking for something, but he didn't know what he wanted, but he had a particular budget in mind. He knew he wanted a Porsche. So I just said, "Well, come down, have a cup of tea, and wander around. We'll sit you in some cars. We'll show you what the differences are. We'll actually physically, let you look at them and and sit in them and, you know, play with them and leave you to it. And he came down, we spent a couple of hours here, and he sent me a really nice email saying, thank you, my path is much clearer now. And that we could spend a couple of hours doing that with somebody, because it helps them, and it helps them work out the differences. People throw model numbers around and, you know, chassis numbers and stuff around, like 718 and 981s and 991 and 9. Some people don't even know what they're talking about. They don't know what they mean. Reality is when they turn around and say, this is the car, you know, this is a 981, this is a 718, this is, and they can, when they can visualize it and sit in it and just feel comfortable and confident with the people they're dealing with, then it really helps them, and it gives them confidence that they don't, I think people are worried about looking silly when they're talking to somebody, particularly like a dealer something. And to come in and just turn around and go, look, I don't know what I'm talking about. Perfect. Let's sit down and find out what you want and spend that time with them. And the other end of the scale, you've got people that go, I want this car in this spec. And that, and
they know exactly what they want.
So you get all mixes.
Yeah. Talking of what you've got here, what's your primary sort of range of cars that you look at, or is it everything? It just depends what you've got.
I mean, we're buying it. So it all starts with the right car, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Not so much. It has to fit into this box of time, but roughly, we now don't sell very many air-cooled cars. So back at the start, we sold lots of 993s, because we had, in the early 2000s, we had 993s, which were relatively young, fairly contemporary cars almost, alongside the contemporary car of the time, or the contemporary Porsche, which was the 996. So there was a lot of conversation about comparing head and heart, actually, with people. So people would, if you imagine, if you cast your mind back 20 years, someone would come in, shall we say, 2003, and they'd be looking at a 7 or 8 year old 993, or maybe a 2 or 3 year old 996, and they'd come thinking that they wanted a 993 because they loved the look of the 993 at this time, and at that time, they would often leave, believe it or not, preferring the drive of the 996 because it was that much more modern.
Yeah.
It was up to date. It was a contemporary car. And if they'd been and driven, another sports car of its type, they would have, it would have been more like those other cars, those other newer cars that they were looking at. So the earliest cars we probably sell now are the last of the 996s, although we do still sell some 993, might sell half a dozen 993 this year. And then the 996s that we sell would probably be purely based on condition and mileage, but it's likely that the ones which are going to be right for us are going to be 996 4Ss, GT3 and turbos, because it's likely that they'll have been looked after well enough, and it's likely that they'll be low enough mileage to be able to park them next door to a 992. And then going through the range in terms of across the board with Porsche, it's really a five car lineup for us. So it's 911 up to 992. So we do plenty of 997 Gen 2. And 991s, we do more Gen 1 than we do second generation 991s. The second product we sell is Cayman. We do very well with Cayman 981 and increasingly with 718 Cayman as well. And the same with Boxster. And what's the fourth car? The fourth car is Macan. So in terms of SUV, I think for me in the Porsche range, it's still a proper Porsche, and I like the product, and we have one as our family car and had one for many years, and we don't do so well with Cayenne, Panamera, Taycan. We're not anti them, it doesn't seem to be our market. It's a four car range, isn't it? 911, Cayman, Boxster, and Macan.
You've got 981 and 718, haven't you? So
yes. Oh yeah, I suppose. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Max, our third co-host of the podcast, who's in traffic somewhere, he's a massive advocate of the Macan, so when he turns up, he'll be right stuck in.
Oh, good. Oh, right, please.
He's absolutely loving it, so that's fair play. I'm just kind of looking at it, and you know, in how old the business is, in starting in 2000, you know, that means that Harbour Cars predates a hell of a lot of the Porsche lineup now. If you think, you know, Harbour Cars was here before the Panamera, before the Taycan, before the Macan, before the Cayenne, even before the Cayman, actually.
Yes.
So given all of that then, you know, what have been the most significant changes that you have witnessed from the industry in that 24 years?
Gosh,
wow.
That's a question. Jeez.
Okay, so the first thing for me is not selling 993s every day. So not, so I'm now talking quite regularly to people, customers that are maybe looking for that perfect air-cooled car, and not finding it in many cases. And also, so for me, where it changed was when we couldn't deal in 993s every day, when there weren't enough 993s, bluntly, to be able to run as a sustainable business by dealing in them, because there was some really not very nice cars out there. There were cars that people were buying, and they were buying them. I'm thinking about when 993s, some really quite average 993s, became £50,000 or £60,000 to buy, and people were ending up in these cars, and they weren't driving the 993 that I remember. You know, they weren't driving the 993s that we dealt in. And so that was a key point when we were selling 996s and 997s with just a few air cooled cars, really. Yeah. So that was one thing. I suppose another benchmark would be when the Macan came out, because that then they then had. Just before that, they had the Cayenne, didn't they? So the Cayenne came out, and we did an amount of Cayenne at first, and that was quite nice, and that started to move us towards being just another Porsche specialist, so just doing Porsche, because we could sell family cars.
Yes, yeah.
And then I think as soon as the Macan came out, for me it was a much better car than the Cayenne to drive day to day. It was that bit smaller, and it was that bit more Porsche like,
more sporty like, isn't it?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. So there was that benchmark. Then I suppose the next thing was four-cylinder cars coming in. So at first, we didn't do very well with four-cylinder cars here. I think it's partly because people would listen to the four-cylinder turbocharged cars on the forecourt and use that as a comparative tool to a six-cylinder flat six. And it probably doesn't sound very good when you start it up from cold and you just have it on tick over. It sounds like a bag of nuts. Then we encouraged people to go and drive them. And then we found out they were actually quite good when we drive them ourselves. Yeah, exactly. And we found that they were different, but actually pound for pound, they were more powerful. So if you're in a 718 Boxster, shall we say, and you were comparing that to the non-S derivative of a 981, you'd probably be quite pleasantly surprised by the mid-range driving performance of it and what you're likely to get day to day out on the road. So we've steadily done a lot better with them.
It's probably still a question we get asked at least once a week, is the difference between the six and the fours, when people come into the showroom and they're chatting about, you know, oh, but it's only a four cylinder. It's like, well, yeah, but so was the 912. So it's not a real Porsche engine and all this. And it's like, no, it is. You've got to educate them into sort of chatting about it. And once you break down the barriers, it's not really even a barrier anymore. It's just an observation that they've made on the internet, where someone else has been talking about the poor four cylinder engine, and then somebody clarifies it as it's just the engine out of a Golf GTI and things. It's like, well, it's not, because it's even laying the wrong way. So about it that way. And then once you actually chat to them, and then, you know, you say, like Rob says, it's like you drive it, it's, you know, it's, the power performance is brilliant, and yeah, they sound initially a bit different, but once they're set up and running, they actually sound quite nice.
But we don't want to convert people. We don't need to convert people. We still sell more, if we're talking about Caymans and Boxsters 981 product, we still sell more 981 product than we do 718. Yeah, and probably. I don't know how long that will last. I don't know if that'll be forever, because a bit like we couldn't sell 993s as regularly as we'd like to have. Maybe the day will come when we can't sell, our typical 981 product, because it's got it you know, its conditions gone off the edge maybe and so on. Yeah. Although I think it's a brilliant product, the 981 product.
So I think it'll be a while off yet before we worry about that.
Yeah.
I've seen every time I've come here, there's been at least one 997.2 in the showroom. And I mean, Rob, I even said when we were having a coffee before we started, I just think those cars look better and better and better.
They do.
I think they still look like contemporary, but they still fit that quintessential 911 DNA that for me as a kind of purist, I guess, that just really dial into that.
Yeah, it will be. That's how it is. It's like the 997 second generation car. That will be a car forever, like the 993 is a car. It's almost a bridging car as well. And what I mean by that is in the same way as the 993 was a modern version of the other air cooled cars, the second generation 997 is probably the culmination of everything that they made after 993, I would say.
Yeah.
That Porsche made after 993.
I was having a little squitz at that one in the showroom.
Yeah.
That's clean, isn't it?
Nice, isn't it?
Cool.
The black one.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Have a look down in beautiful the wheel arches. Yeah.
And that cream one that you had as well, the C4S.
Oh, yeah.
Have you got that? Has that gone?
And cream. Yeah. Strawberries and cream has gone to a lady who's going to use it as her main car. Ooh, she lives in London and she's going to be taken out across Europe and all sorts.
Yeah, that's a really cool car.
She absolutely loves that car.
Yeah, I bet.
I was going to say, I think one of the greatest shames with the 997.2 is also part of its charm, actually. And it's because at the time that it came out and the financial crash and whatnot, there's not that many of them in comparison, certainly to like 997 Gen 1. And it is part of its charm. But like, you know, like you guys saying, when you go for a certain level for quality stock, I guess that presents its own challenges, right?
Yeah. It's they're out there though. We'll probably have what, 3 or 4 997 Gen 2s at any one time.
I think so. Yeah, and if you have them, you get offered them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Somebody will go, I see you've got a black C2S out there. I've got very much the same that I'm going to get rid of. Yeah. And that leads to people then phoning us up and saying, do you want to buy my car? I've got this, and which is great. You know, the more. You tend to get mirrors of the products that you've got marketed.
Yes.
So, you know, like we've got the GT4s and things at the moment. We've had, and we do get people phoning us up saying, oh, I've got this. Would you be interested? I see you've already got one. Which is great for us because, you know, we get to know the cars that we're buying as well. So we know the sources of them and the history, and it really helps.
With just going back to like the proliferation of the Porsche model lineup, in the time Harbour Cars has been in business. Rob, there's something that you said off mic about like the Cayman when it first came out might have been a little bit, not so much of a harder sell, but maybe the public not quite so warmed up to them. Whereas that's the perception of that has changed now, has it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, there's people that perhaps wouldn't have bought a 987 Cayman do buy 981 Caymans. I think it, or why is that? I think it's because it's a little bit bigger. So when we put them in the showroom and you're talking about lining everything up perfectly because we've got these floor tiles and so on. So we know that a 981 Cayman is in fact the same size as a 997 911. And you know, in terms of length, certainly. And I think it's just that little bit bigger. And so so people that might have bought a 911 will now will consider a 981 Cayman. But then it's strange because there's a bit of a resurgence now back to 987 Caymans where, I think there's people looking to get back into that. And we've got a couple of 987s at the moment and I've driven them recently to buy them. And I thought, yeah, this is fun. And it, you know, put a smile on my face and maybe didn't have the same power, but certainly had plenty of fun.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a halo effect going on there from when the 981 GT4 made people look at the 987 Cayman R and actually appreciate that? Are people now looking beyond the 987 Cayman R, other 987 Caymans, and thinking, actually,
car. Yeah, because the 987 Cayman R, that's a difficult car to buy because there aren't very many of those around. Plus, it's, over £40,000. And you can get a lot of what you get out of 987 Cayman R by buying, Cayman S, the 987 Cayman S. I suppose so.
Yeah. 981 Cayman's a lovely thing though, isn't it?
I think it is. Great. And I think it's so if you could put a pin in a pad of cars that we'll always have, and that we, you know, we're if you look at the amount of 981 KMNSs that we've got in relation, and GTSs in relation to how many cars we have in stock, so we'll always have them. We'll always have, you know, 997 C2S, C4Ss. We're, it's unusual today. We don't have a 997 Turbo. I think they're great cars. I think they're, I think, you know, across the generation. So since that was launched in 2006, and I remember getting our first one with under 100 miles on it in Christmas 2006. I remember delivering that car. And that's a car that I think really undervalued for a very long while. And then the market did catch up with that and it went up a bit in price, but it's still, you know, it's still terrific value. So I put those, so 981 Caymans, 997 C2Ss and C4Ss, and then first generation 991s. And of course, we are now selling 992s and so on, but not in the quantities of those other cars.
Yeah, I was going to ask on that then. So, like, yeah, how have you found that? We've spoken in recent weeks. We did a 992 special podcast a couple of weeks ago, and certainly, like, how we feel is like the new stuff. We like it, perhaps don't love it or pine for it in the same way. Maybe, Max, I know you really do like it, so without speaking for you there. But we've just found that from what we've seen discussing with friends, that there's a similar sort of vibe there. Anecdotally, from your experience, are you seeing the same sort of love for a 992 as you did for the 991 when it was new, or...?
Well, from my own personal point of view, is I'm relieved. It's a great car, so I'm really pleased that they have brought out a great car. Because it's always a worry if you're working with a manufacturer and they bring out something which you know you're going to be selling, if not now, in the future, in quantities, you know, serious quantities. You know, it's good news that they bring something out which is a, you know, going to be a, give us a sustainable future selling it, as you know. So I like it. I think it is different. I think it's not that different to second generation 991s, though, for me personally. I think it probably looks bigger when you put it in a showroom, particularly, than it actually is out on the road. For me,
that's partly down to the body, though, I think, as well. Yeah. They're all wide bodies, so they look chunkier than they are. I mean, the cabriolets in particular, with the roof down, they've got a
quite
really big
bulbous,
back end.
Aren't they?
Yeah, it's a lovely car, and you compare it to a 997, and they're not hugely different in size, but it looks big in comparison. Yeah. But it's not an overwhelming car when it's out in public, but when it's in here and you have the two side by side, they do look considerably bigger, but it's a very, I agree with Rob. I think they're brilliant cars, you know.
And it's still a proper Porsche and it's a proper sports car. And it's not like when I get in other sports car product or from Mercedes-Benz or BMW, where they're powerful, absolutely, but they're not. A lot of the time for me, they don't drive like a sports car does and not like a 911 does, not for me. Yeah. Yes, they've got buckets of power, but they're not the same. But for me, the 992 does do that. But in terms of what people talk to me about, I think people are saying it's got quite big and so on. And is it too big? But for me, in and out of them day in, day out, there's a relief there. And I think, I don't know, people... It'll grow. Hasn't grown on people, it will.
Yeah, I agree.
I've seen all this over the different incarnations of cars. I mean, it's exactly what everybody said about the 991 when that came out. Yeah. And now there's talk about perhaps the 991 Gen 1 being the last,
naturally aspirated,
proper Porsche.
Yeah. They threw in the electric power steering and everyone panicked because it had electric power steering and it was amazing. Yeah. And it's really good though.
That point about the cabs is an interesting one, isn't it? Isn't it? Because I think the 991 was the first really good looking 911 cab for me, particularly with the hood up. Well, with the hood down.
Yeah, right.
And I think it remains so because I think the 992 is not such a good looking cab.
Oh, I like that. Controversial.
Yeah, I really like your Agate Grey one with the techno wheels.
Yeah.
I've looked at that online a lot. I think that's such a good looking car. Yeah. I think hood up or down. So I think that could that could remain peak 911 cab if there's such a thing.
Okay, so you think that looks better as a cabriolet than a 997?
Yeah. Especially with the hood up.
Yeah.
Because of the way they you know, the C pillar, if you like, yes. if you could call yes. it that.
No, yeah. It's much
yeah.
more contoured.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
It was a new roof design with that 991, and the whole point of it was that it should follow the silhouette of the coupe a lot more, be more faithful to it. And they definitely have achieved that.
Yeah,
there's
definitely
no question of that.
Yeah.
I think that holds a lot of appeal. The other good thing is, again, in terms of where the Porsche model lineup has expanded, sports car or not, is, well, if somebody walks in and goes, a 992 is not for me, it's too big, and the PCM is too complicated, and you go, well, don't worry about it, behold, the 718 GTS, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, whether it's 5 years ago or whatever it was, 10 years ago, that car didn't exist. Mm. So there really is a car for everybody, a Porsche for everybody. And I guess the responsibility of you guys as you know, specialists in the field is just ensuring the right people get into the right cars.
Yeah, this goes a bit back to the conversation we were having earlier about the people that they send us an email or give us a call and say, look, I'm really confused by what's going on. And we'd like to come and have a chat about it. You know, it's fine. Yeah. We can, you know, as I say, show you around the cars and you can visualize what you're looking at and what you're sitting in and things. And it does happen. We have people come in and, you know, they can come in and they're dead set on owning a 911. And it's like, I've always wanted to own a 911. And then you get talking about Caymans and things and they go, oh, but I'm only going to be going out on Sundays in it, and I'm only going to do this, and I'm not going to do that. And it's like, well, consider a Cayman, you know, because it kind of fits the profile of what you're after. Yeah. And they can buy a 911, and then in a year's time, 18 months, they'll come back and go, quite fancy a Cayman now.
Or
they'll bypass it and go, let's have a go at a Cayman, you know, or a Boxster, or, you know, depending on what they were looking at. And it's quite a popular conversation, regular conversation that we're having with people.
That's somewhere where you can do really good work with the four-cylinder 718, isn't it? Because someone might be looking at a price point and think they want a 911, but they look at the 911 at that point and think, actually, that's a bit of an older car than I want. I want a bit more tech and stuff like that. And you say, well, don't dismiss the four-cylinder 718, and they might then get in it because you say that and think, actually, this is bloody fantastic.
Yeah, age is a big factor with things as well, because when people, you know, one of the things that comes up quite a lot is price. I mean, when you look at the Boxster that we've got out here at the moment, the 987, the price point it's at, you know, sort of 25 odd grand. And a lot of people get their head around it's a 2012 car for mid £20,000. It's like a, in their words, an old car, even though we accept the price is, you know, the right price. But it's somebody coming into it and going, well, how can that be when I can go and get myself into an F-Type or something much newer for the same money? And it's like, well, that's, you know, go and own an F-Type and then come and have a look at it's like you see how well you do out of it. It's how much you enjoy it and see where it is, but it does surprise people how much they hold their value in terms of resale when they look at, you know, well-prepped, nice cars.
Yeah. One of my favourite bits of stock of yours for a long time was the grey, maybe A-gate 718 Boxster S with the sort of classic Sport Classic wheel, the sort of Fuchs style wheel. That one. I thought, that's a great looking car.
Yeah.
That would always stand out for me on the website.
Gosh, I can't remember this specific car. Have we still got it? Do we?
Up until fairly recently, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Lovely thing, I thought.
They're great cars, though.
Yeah.
The Boxster is a really good car.
And I had one when I bought my McCann. Yeah. From
you don't have to change. You can say
I'm
going to
stick with McCann. From Porsche Centre Leeds, I ended up with a 718 Boxster S for a week. And so I drove it back from Leeds back to my house. First day, I thought, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah.
But a couple of days later, I thought, this is fantastic.
Brilliant.
And by the time I gave it back, I thought, I'm not sure I want to give this back and take my new McCann. I really, really, really enjoyed it. The performance and the way that it delivers the performance, fantastic.
Yeah.
A little rocket ship it was. Absolute rocket. And it's a whole different kind of experience. Mm. The sound, isn't it? It's its own thing. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, the one thing, we were saying this the other day, that the sports exhaust on that, did you have the sports exhaust on it?
I think it had almost everything on it, so it could be pretty aggro.
They do sound good. I like the, you get the reverb and the pops and bangs.
Yeah, lots of pops and bangs.
It's not daunting on the road when you're out and about. That's, you can have it on and it's not overpowering.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I've become a bit of an advocate for them. Just I feel like someone needs to come out in defence of them. So I'm glad that you guys are as well.
No, not at all. No.
Really appreciate you guys kind of divulging really kind of what the business is about and what works for you. I think that's really admirable, rather than just saying, oh, we do everything, you know. And but it'd be interesting to tell, like, why you don't go so much near the air-cooled stuff these days.
It's not that we don't love the product, it's just that the it's just not possible for us to do that in the quantities that we used to do it. There just aren't that many really, really lovely air-cooled cars out there. And it's been a bit of a transition of having to come away from it and being, because some of the cars that we've been presented with just haven't, they're not how they should be, sadly. You know, they're not how they were. They're not how they were when we sold them as contemporary cars.
So you wouldn't be comfortable with those, you know, selling those cars because they're substandard, basically, of what your standards are.
It's got an actual contemporary memory of how they were when they were younger. And don't get me wrong, there's some great ones out there still.
Yeah, yeah.
And we will do some 993s this year, but they just aren't there in any quantity.
So they'll be what you'd consider to be exceptional cars. When an exceptional car comes along, then that'll be one that you
take.
And
that's how it has to be. And then there's the other factor, which is we own everything. So we own all the cars that we sell. Because we're not sending these cars on consignment, we're putting our money into them. So they've got to be absolutely correct. I can't bring myself to do it with some of them. Some of the ones that that we've looked into, they've not felt like I want to pay that amount of money, you know, for this car and then sell it on. Yeah. And then we also want to be realistic about it. And this is another factor. I'm long past selling, nice 40,000 mile 993s at £30,000 to £35,000.
That's a shame.
But that used to be how it was. So there was a showroom where a middle of the road 996 was £49,995, and there was a 993 with under 40,000 miles parked next to it for £35,000, or 993 turbos. They seem to always be about £55,000. Yeah. Retail with between 25,000 and 35,000 miles. So we've moved on from worrying about trying to get them at that price and sell them at that price. Yeah. But the bigger thing is really just about the condition of the cars that you're presented with, and then what you're passing on to other people.
Yeah.
Once they go out the road.
It's a preparation standard as well, isn't it? It's like you can get offered cars in that could potentially still be quite nice cars, but within the budget that you've got to work with it, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, for somebody to walk in off the street and see a 993 sat there of a standard that we were happy to present.
Yes.
You know, to actually get it to that standard is going to take X amount of money, but you need to have the allowance in it to be able to do that. And
I think that's what I meant by owning the cars, because we are going to own them, because we're going to buy them. It's, well, how much would we then need to then charge to get them to the standard so that they were of an equivalent standard to the younger cars that we deal in?
I think context is great as well for people listening at home that might not know. There are very, very, very few people in the Porsche industry whereby 100% of their stock is bought by the business and not SOR, sale or return. So you guys are literally putting your money where your mouth is, really, in terms of like great cars that represent you and your business, because you paid for them. And then also the other side of that is the 1 year bumper to bumper guarantee that you guys have as well, which, you know, again, legally it's 3 months warranty. Some in industry do 6 months, you know, some, not a lot, do 1 year. So on your side, I have to say, as a consumer, that's commendable. But again, you're putting your money where your mouth is. So it's important, like you're saying, Rob, I guess that standard of car you're buying from the outset is the right one.
Absolutely. I mean, the warranty that we're giving, we self-fund as well. So we haven't always done that. It was for a long while, we went through an insurance company, and we now are very pleased we moved, because it's allowed us to give the warranty that we want to do the right thing by people. But if you, for me, and it's not for everyone, but for me, it's absolutely crucial that you buy it and own it first yourself. And then just the financial facts of life are that you need to do it that way if you're then going to guarantee it and do so for a year, and you're going to be standing by that customer for at least a year. Might well be longer than a year that you're hopefully going to share a relationship with them and going forward. But you want to be proud of it, and we are. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Wonderful.
The relationship aspect there, I think's crucial. And sets up the next question nicely then. So certainly in the last few years, we've all seen this like rise of auctions, you know, How have you found that? Because that's completely different to what you guys do. So have you found that a problem with the online auctions or you know, where does it sit?
I don't think it's had any really effect.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a problem because we're the antipathy of it, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Because we're the absolute opposite. So Chris has talked about that we're a retail showroom, so that you can come along and you can ask questions, and it doesn't cost anything, and you can see the cars side by side, and it's nice, so you can see different generations. You know, most days you'd be able to see a 996, 997, 991, and 992 by their side of each other in the showroom, maybe, and you know, that's free to come and to come and touch and feel and drive the cars if you need to, and to understand them. And then, of course, you've looked at the an auction, and there's some people who've got a retailing background that have set up fabulous auction businesses. And I don't know, I'm a fool. I don't understand why I didn't do this. It seems like such a obvious way to make great money. So you don't have to provide any aftercare whatsoever. You don't have to own it in the first place. It's the perfect business.
Yeah.
Why don't we do it? and then you can make good margin. You know, like a low auction
charge
fee would be
6% on the fee, and
well,
stuff
that would
like
be
that.
A low auction fee, wouldn't it? At 6%. Yeah. Well, I think that we'd do well to have 10%, and we don't take business advice from us, but you know, it's been founded on passion, not intelligence, obviously, this business, hasn't it? So come and see and touch and feel and enjoy the purchase experience, and then if you've got a problem with the car, you can come back to us as well. But yeah, we are the opposite. It's like we are the opposite of people who are putting cars in the post. You can buy a car online and buy it in the post. And the closest we've ever come to that was during the pandemic. And we did as little of that as we possibly could, because it was the absolute opposite. And we found this strange situation during the pandemic. We were taking these inquiries where we were having... We're having to explain that we weren't open, even though, of course, the website was still open and so on. But this crucial other half, but it's not half, is it? It's way more than half of the experience. This crucial other part of us having a physical presence wasn't there, and you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And yet there are people that are still bashing away trying to sell cars in the post.
In the post, I like that.
Yes.
For me, I've kind of banged on about it quite a lot on the podcast over the years. And look, you know, it works for some people, and that's kind of fine. But yeah, it goes back to you buy a Porsche because you really want one.
Yeah,
it's the passion. Yeah. And like you said, if it's kind of the click and collect, you're basically buying a bag of bolts in the post. And, you know, I personally would like to rock up somewhere and chat with somebody who's as passionate about these cars as I am. It feeds into that experience and the relationship, which goes beyond just the initial purchase of that car.
Of course,
you know, and that means a lot to me personally, but I understand everybody's different.
So. Yeah, there's different customers, isn't there, for different things. Yeah,
there is. Yeah.
But it seems feels like the customer's the winner if you come in here.
That is the plan.
Yeah.
But people, you know, there's people that have bought lots of Porsches, and so they know that we're dealing with, and they know what they want, and we do a tremendous amount on the phone and by email and by video. So the technology is there that we do 95% of it with somebody, but there's that crucial thing of coming down and still touching it and
feeling
and seeing it before you actually you know go away in it.
We had two different instances today, didn't we? We had two cars that were sold today. One guy had been down and seen it a couple of weeks ago, and he decided that this is the car he wanted to go with, so he phoned us up, had a chat, and then made the deposit over the phone, and he's picking it up in a couple of weeks, in a week's time. And then we had another guy that hasn't seen it, but is coming down Wednesday, where we are now Monday, to just come and visualise what he's bought. But he's, you know, he's quite happy with all the information he's been given, and the videos and the chat and, you know, the phone calls and things to do it. So you've got two different ends of the table there in one day.
And both are very normal, aren't they? Yeah. They're both those circumstances are very normal in terms of people making a decision to buy the car over the phone, because that person knows enough. They know they want that model of car. They know what it drives like. They know they're at that point, but they want to take it out of the market. So they've been able to do that, and then they'll come down to go through it properly face to face and see the car. So we've been their eyes, if you like, trying to explain the car to them over the phone, and then they're just coming to see that confirmed. Yeah. And then there's the traditional approach where somebody's come down, and we've been fortunate enough to have sold a car against another dealer that and we've done it through just traditional service, essentially.
Yeah, yeah,
so, yes, it's the right car, but also the service was there. He came down, drove the car, and
he was looking at two of the same cars, just slightly different specs, and went for our one over the other one. But distance obviously is a thing that people come up with all the time, because we're obviously in Ireland, but there's miles between us and possibly the customer. So we do a fair amount of conversations over the phone, WhatsApp, emails, text. They've obviously got the videos on the website that people have a look at as well, and that gives them enough information by the time we've had two or three phone calls, some emails back and forth, some pictures, some videos, that they can then make the decision to like Rob said, take the car out of the market and come down. There could be 300 miles away, but they'll get that point quite comfortably.
Yeah.
Where they tell me, I'm happy with everything I've heard.
Yeah.
And that's great, because it's, reviews online and, social media and stuff like that, where people are putting out their experience of dealing with us particularly. And it's great that people do that and have the confidence where they, that video that we did at Christmas, had two or three people come in, and off the back of that, which was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. And everyone comes from the north of us, don't they? Because they have to, because it's just fish to the south.
And I do think a significant part of that, and I certainly feel it as a consumer and an enthusiast, is that warranty part. Mm. I think that will help people to go along that journey with you virtually and on the phone and on WhatsApp, and then think, right, I'm going to drive 300 miles to look at that car, because I feel like I'm 9/10 of the way there because of what I've learned, and also what I will expect going forward from that warranty. And I think that's really important.
It's impossible to imagine anything else for us that someone wouldn't be able to walk away with a proper package.
Yeah. And we've talked about that lots, haven't we? And personally, as a consumer and enthusiast, I've bought three Porsches from three different specialists, all who have an in-house warranty. And that's interesting. That's important. That's
interesting. And you've shown an interest in a couple of cars here. Look, why have we not capitalised on it?
There's time yet this evening.
I think Max, you're going to be staying longer than that.
Well, he came late, didn't he? But he can stay late.
The card machine is there.
Well, look, unless Max and Andy have got any questions thereafter, I've a great question to perhaps finish on, and if we could get an answer from both of you, Chris and Rob. So again, in looking at 24 years of the business, and we said earlier on in the conversation about how the Porsche model lineup has expanded so much. So the question is, which Porsche model do you think in that time has had the biggest positive influence on the brand and its enthusiasts? So which mark or model within Porsche has been the most, the greatest news, the best news from your point of view?
Okay, there's a sort of a quick and easy answer to that, because it has to be which model after the 911, because you can't answer it with 911, can you?
This is
what I mean. Yeah, look, if you was to say, for example, I think the Carrera T actually, then that's totally fine as well, because that's a model in its own right. The 911 GTS is obviously, that was launched in 2010, so you don't have to be as as blasé, I guess, as 911. You can, if you want a deep dive. It's a bit of a question, and but
I think my answer might be a bit different to yours, but you've got a different experience to what I've got.
Well, go on, Chris. I think,
based on the question you've said, the one that's opened up the mark and provided the biggest experience to the customer is probably the 981S, because its price point now, it's that kind of bracket where people are looking to spend mid-30s, maybe a bit more, and they don't want a 911 for that era, but they want something new. So it's got the creature comforts. It's quite tidy inside. It's well presented. It feels modern inside, but it drives epically. It's a really great, a genuinely really good package. And that is, from my experience here in the last 12, because I came obviously 2012, and that was borderline when the 981 came out anyway. So I've got experience of late 987s and obviously 997s, Gen 1 and Gen 2, but then most of my positive experiences, obviously people love the 911, I'm not saying they don't, but the package that the 981 offers, and having seen how it's changed over the years, and it hasn't changed that much in terms of value and stuff, it's, I think it's been the best all-rounder for the customers.
Well, I guess as well, we said earlier on in terms of like size.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a small car.
And I think I'm repeating myself from that Christmas video anyway.
Well, no, but it's fine if you back it, right?
I genuinely think, for me, my experience here, the 981 has given entry, and people have come out of 911s to go into a 981. You know, they've run a 997 and then they've turned around and said, I've heard a lot about it. Let me have a go in one of these. And they've run it and they've loved it. But then you've got things like the GTS, the GT4. I'm probably talking specifically about the S because it's more accessible for everybody in terms of performance, value for money, drive, modernity, styling. It was a game changer when it came out. So, and it still looks a very modern car now, even though it's 10 years old.
Yeah, it does.
So,
it's a comprehensive answer. Mm. I like it.
Sorry, as a 981S Boxster owner, what a great answer.
What about you, Rob?
I think my answer is about the same because I think I assume that the question is what's the individual range of cars, not an individual car. Yeah. So you don't want me to say GT3, but the I think it is probably the 981 Cayman product that's done the most for a lot of our customers. Because I remember a time when we sold 996 911s, and there was a benchmark price that was very accessible and attractive to our customers at the time. Was about £35,000 to buy a 996. I remember the same with the first generation 997s, where they sat at a figure where we were selling them as more contemporary cars than they are now at mid 30s. And we're not able, and it's not a bad thing, but we're not really able to do that with the 99, with really good, you know, sub 60,000 mile 997 C2Ss and C4Ss. They sit a bit higher than that, the second generation cars. We're not able to sell the first generation cars, because of some of the issues with them and so on in terms of in that price range at mid 30s. But we can do that with the 981 product. Yeah. So yeah, sure.
Well.
So the best car in the 981 Cayman range or Boxster range is GTS, but that's about 45,000 to 50,000. What for us, I think, has become our sort of very accessible, brilliant second or third car is 981 Cayman S. And it's not to say that it's actually, it's not to say it's better than a 911, but it is more accessible and there's a balance.
People will run both. They'll have a 911 and they'll have a 981. Yeah. Yeah. So they could be running a 997,
and people swap between the two. This is really a thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. People, but there's you said about modernity, if that is a thing. It's new enough in terms of its feel and its look and so on.
And
so,
there's companies out there, you know, just going slightly off tangent, that will allow you to retrofit things like CarPlay and stuff into the 981 PCMs and stuff. So if you wanted that, but you didn't want to go to a 718 or, you know, that sort of value of car, and you wanted to keep it in there, but keep it, you know, keep your phone paired up to it quite nicely and have Google Maps working, you can do that for inside the cost of changing the head unit and retain the originality. Mm. You know, there's people out there developing stuff for these cars. So it does show how popular they are. And I know that's not unique to the 981 because it covers the 991 and stuff as well, but it does show there's a lot of development out there for people.
Yeah.
Just one last question, just because it's something that I think about periodically, even probably before I was a 981 owner. And I guess this is true of Boxster or Cayman, but with the S, GTS, and then Spider or GT4, you know, I'm not sure if it's an even step up between each of them. As an S owner, is GTS a sensible upgrade, or is it better to skip and go to GT4 or Spider?
Okay, yeah. So, So I think it's a very obvious upgrade going to a GTS from an S. So you definitely won't be disappointed, because it's a slightly better car. But it's quite a bit more money, but yeah. but it's a slightly better car. So people do that, and I certainly wouldn't disencourage it. What I'd encourage people to do with the GT4 is be sure that that's actually what you want, because I think if you were in a Cayman GTS or a Boxster GTS and you were going to a GT4 or a Spider, you'd be going into a completely different car. I think I'd often surprised. It's like I would say to somebody looking to buy a GT3, who maybe, if you've got a budget to buy the best 911, and you want, say, my personal favorite car out of the whole Porsche range is GT3, before we get into, you know, which chassis GT3, because we'll be here all night, but so that would be my personal favorite car. But that's with a background of having the luxury of being able to jump in lots of other cars, and I haven't got to use just one car. But if you wanted just the best 911 for driving around all day, then you'd probably want a GTS or a turbo. Yeah. And going back to your question, if you were coming out of your Boxster 981S, it wouldn't be a very obvious thing to go into a Spider or into a GT4. You should try the GTS first, I think, because you might actually be disappointed, because it's out on the wing, the GT4, in the same way that the GT3 is out on the wing. And even though they look a little bit different to the rest of the range, they actually drive a lot more different than they look different.
If that yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Great, yeah. That's interesting, because, I mean, two of my other favourite bits of stock that you've had, one, again, quite recently, you had a silver Cayman GTS manual, mm-hmm. which looked amazing, and maybe, could it be a year ago? I'm not sure. A black Cayman GTS manual with silver wheels, and
yeah.
I sent that to so many people saying, someone that I know has got to buy this car, because I can't, but I really want to be close to it.
You said can't.
But yeah,
Cayman GTS outside.
You're not going home today.
He's looking nervous. He's looking nervous.
Well, I think that's a fantastic conversation, and certainly kind of painted the picture, I think, for what we know Harbour Cars to be and what the business is about. So, Rob and Chris, thank you for inviting us along and letting us have a look around the showroom. We do really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys. And,
thank you. Yeah.
I
feel like I'm nodding a lot, which doesn't work.
I'm thinking it'd be nice to come back another time and dive into, you know, as you said there, Rob, about, like, you know, you've got a love for GT3s. Well, then maybe we can explore that in another episode. Maybe.
Yeah.
So, yep. Sounds like a great idea.
That'd be grand. So, yeah, look, in the meantime, thanks for, like I said, inviting us in. And, yeah, we'll have you back on the airwaves on Nunwich Radio very soon.
Cool. Excellent.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden Collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.